wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here. The time now is 3:07 PM. It is literally, we are a third of the way through the show already, Copper. That is just like boggles my mind that we are a third of the way through the show. But hey, you know, when you're having fun, time flies.
Yeah.
But hey, listen, folks, I got to tell you real quickly about the folks that I know that have probably one of the coolest jobs in the world. I mean, outside of me having a radio show, they've got one of the coolest jobs, and that's the folks at eTaxBreaks.com. I know them. 23 years of experience, and what their job is just finding you money you didn't know you had. Finding you money. How cool is that? To be able to call somebody up on the phone and go, hey, man, we just found you some more money. Really? Because of the things they do, like you ran your business just with common sense, like you kept it open during the pandemic, you retained your employees, you hired a veteran, you put your business in a certain geographic location, all things you didn't know you qualified for, tax credits, tax incentives, grant monies. It's amazing. So folks, I'm telling you, eTaxBreaks.com, that's what they do. They only get paid if they find you money. And last month alone, they found over $7 million for their clients in 1 month. 1 month. Check them out. They got a special landing page online for Right Side listeners. It's eTaxBreaks.com/Right Side. eTaxBreaks.com/Right Side. All right. So Charlene sent me an update. The lovely Charlene. She is my favorite groupie. But she listened. I was talking about earlier the question at the very end of Senator Tuberville's questioning of General Lloyd Austin. I'm sorry, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. He asked the SecDef, what is your position on whether or not military members should be dishonorably discharged if they don't get the vaccine, which is currently mandated? And so I asked her, did she hear the final on that? She said that he simply referred him to the UCMJ as the framework by which they operate. And then he said the vaccine is a requirement. And he said that was all he was going to say on the subject. So her opinion, she said, my take is he agrees, and it sounds to me like he does. So what we're looking at here right now is in the absence of anything else, it sounds like the Secretary of Defense would believe that a dishonorable discharge is potentially the right course of action for someone who chooses not to get vaccinated. More woke policies. So I'm going to finish up Afghanistan and move into other woke stuff about the military. I'm not sure I'm going to get through my whole triple dipper for the day, the way things are going, because this one is so filled up with stuff. Remember the triple dipper, three storylines you got to know. The first one right now today is that the military is too often just a tool for liberals, just a tool to accomplish their liberal means, not to win wars, but to accomplish their liberal means. And folks, that's just wrong. Well, one of the things that I want to make sure you know, though, in the testimony today, Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, I told you before that Milley and McKenzie, the two generals sitting there with him, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, commander of CENTCOM, both of them said they had recommended that we maintain a troop presence of 2,500 or so that we do not lose our position in that part of the world. Secretary of Defense Austin, I've got this starred in my notes. I've got multiple printouts on this stuff. But Secretary of Defense Austin confirmed that. Austin was asked whether the president received personal recommendations from his top military advisors like Milley and McKenzie. Quote, their input was received by the president and considered by the president for sure, Austin testified. Man. All right, but what other stuff happens? When I say liberals tend to use the military too often, what other stuff happened? I'm looking at a story right now, came off Fox News, and the title of it is, Woke Issues Distracted Leaders from Afghanistan, Former Military Officials Say. Now, I'm going to turn to the very last page of this seven-page article. Well, that's right, there's lots of paper. Seven-page article that said that one military official said, under the Trump administration, there were only three objectives for the military. Increasing lethality and readiness, strengthening relationships with allied partners, and departmental reforms. That's exactly what it should be. Basically running the military for military purposes. But what we're seeing right now is an incredible amount of wokeness in the military. So a number of these are anonymous sources, former senior officials, that kind of thing. And some of that, I hate it. Go ahead and put your name on it if you're going to get out there and do this. But it's an interesting story, but it matches the things that I'm seeing on the ground, all right? And what I'm seeing right here is one former senior official who spoke on the condition of anonymity said that under President Biden, top officials in the Pentagon have held meetings on culture war issues every week and sometimes more. And the roster of those attending included people like Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, secretaries of all the military departments, and they met. He says they didn't meet on readiness, but he says they met every week on things like transgender issues, extremism, racism, sexual assault, sexual harassment, et cetera, et cetera. And they were distracted at all times by the fact that they were doing these weekly meetings. And there's only so many hours in a week, and yet they were spending hours every week updating each other on policies and procedures that dealt with what we would call woke or culture war type issues. And General Mark Milley says at one point, he goes, I want everybody to know that the United States military is an apolitical institution. But then you go on and you find out that Fox News is interviewing insiders who are saying things like, I don't know, why did we appoint a guy like Bishop Garrison to be the senior advisor and head of the Pentagon's, quote, countering extremism working group, when Garrison himself is someone who in 2019 was putting on his social media that all Trump backers were supporters of racism and misogyny and extremism, and therefore if you supported Trump, you yourself were a racist. And that's the guy we put in charge of the White House's new, quote, countering extremism working group to work with the Pentagon. That's what I'm talking about. Then you've got things like, in this article, all true, the Navy faced criticism just this past spring when slides were leaked out showing that they had gone through some extremism training, saying that sailors could not discuss politically partisan subjects, but it did advocate for talking about Black Lives Matter while on duty was acceptable. Okay. Or the Navy also placing the book by Ibram Kendi, How to Be an Anti-Racist, on his recommending reading list when the book is basically filled with critical race theory and is racism in itself. Or how about this? Senator Tom Cotton and Representative Dan Crenshaw have put together a hotline where you can call and have like a whistleblower status, and people in the military are informing them near daily of all the woke mismanagement stuff they're having to deal with. One airman told them their unit was forced into a racist exercise called a privilege walk, where members of their wing were ordered to separate themselves by race and gender in order to stratify their people based on privilege. One Marine said they had to go through a military history training session that at the last minute was replaced with mandatory training on police brutality and white privilege and systemic racism in the military. A member of the Special Operations community told us that they're being instructed that the U.S. Special Operations community is racist. And it just goes on and on and on. There's 2 million service members, roughly, at any given time. And yet, there have been a few cases where you can say there were people that were doing some whack job stuff. You're going to find it in a group of 2 million people, you're going to find some beliefs and ideologies that may not fit the norm or may be considered dangerous or extremist. In 2 million people, you're going to find some of those, but it is not systemic. They have found a few dozen total in their investigations, and yet they're going to tear down everything that we believe in. Or here's another article I've got right now. This came off of an organization's website called Task and Purpose. You may have seen it, Task and Purpose. And sometimes they have what I would consider to be almost like an anti-military bent, but sometimes they have some really good articles. Task and Purpose has one right now. It's called People Are Losing Their Minds Over Special Operations Command's New Diversity Chief. Well, Special Operations Command, that's the headquarters for the Navy SEALs, the Army Ranger Regiment, the Green Berets, all of the elite fighting forces in the world, in the Western world, can relate to SOCOM. And SOCOM just hired a guy this spring named Richard Torres-Estrada. So Richard Torres-Estrada is going to be the first ever Chief of Diversity and Inclusion for Special Operations Command. Why do the Green Berets, the Navy SEALs, need a Chief of Diversity and Inclusion? And the interesting piece is, though, old boy was put on suspension immediately. He was reassigned to other duties while they had to investigate him. Because, oh, it just turns out that much like the other guy I told you about, that Garrison Butler guy, that old, what's his name? I just said his name a minute ago. Richard Torres Estrada, the Chief of Diversity and Inclusion for the Special Operations Command. Turns out that he had Facebook posts where he equated Trump to Hitler. And that's the guy they're going to put in there in charge of diversity and inclusion, who apparently is willing to go out there and have some very extreme and pointed opinions that indicate that he is already partisan before he ever got the job. How do we get an activist? Well, in fact, that's what the investigation is partly about. The commander of SOCOM, Army General Richard Clark, wanted an investigation done to find out how he was selected to be the command's diversity and inclusion officer when he's got that kind of a background that was pretty easy to find. Well, Rob O'Neill, the Navy SEAL who shot bin Laden, he came out in response to all of this chief of diversity and inclusion for SOCOM. And his words were, and I can't say exactly what he said, but he said, "I don't give a blank what you look like or where you're from. If I get shot wearing my body armor and you can carry me home to my wife or husband, you fit in. That's it." He said, "If the top five people are competing for a job happen to all be Asian females, then I want those Asian females doing the job. I want the best of the best. That's the way we've always been, and it works. And it's true. Don't water down the standards to go woke." Well, folks, the Democrats are using our military for their purposes. And in a minute, I'm going to finish this up by talking about how it even extends into our National Guard troops. So we're heading into a short break right now. When I get back, I'm going to remind you of something that broke in the news yesterday. It broke while I was on the air, but I'm going to refresh it in light of this discussion about that too often liberals use our military strictly to experiment with and to use for their own liberal policies. Folks, it can't keep happening like that. This is the most honorable profession. These are people who put on the uniform to go to hard places and do hard things. They sacrifice time away from their families, and too often they sacrifice their lives and their limbs. And this is not right that they should wind up being the experimentation, the tool, the CYA for liberals who don't otherwise know how to run things. All right, I'll wrap it up in a minute. You're going to be interested to hear what's happening in New York. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. All right, folks, I said my triple dipper for the day. Triple dipper, three storylines you got to be aware of, you got to know. Number one has been the military is just a tool for liberals. And I've gone through all the stuff they do, the fact that politics too often drives a train in the use of the military, even use of force with the military. But then oftentimes we see now liberals tend to use it for political experimentation, for culture wars and social justice. And they're doing that at exponential rates right now in the Biden administration. But the last one that I want to point out to you is the things that happen even with our National Guard, because don't think for a second that what I'm talking about is reserved to the active duty. We have an amazing National Guard in Alabama. We do. And the governors of the states can call up their National Guard for duty when they see fit, based upon the needs of the state. It can be a natural disaster. It can be civil disturbance. It can be any number of things. It can be pandemic relief. We got a situation right now in New York that's going to be very interesting to play out. And so I want to play a clip for you that I played yesterday. It broke while I was on the air. And I want to give it a bit more expansion in the final minutes of this segment. Copper, get clip one ready. And when you got it ready, let me know. But to give you some background here, in New York, the governor, Governor Hochul, thank you, Copper, when Governor Hochul took over from Governor Cuomo, you know, our Emmy Award winner, Governor Cuomo, when Governor Hochul took over, she has decided she's going to enforce a vaccine mandate for all healthcare officials. Now, suddenly, and lo and behold, we're seeing that the teachers union was able to get teachers in court, and currently they don't have to get a vaccine, but healthcare workers do. And the governor announced yesterday that they are all losing their jobs beginning last night if they are not getting vaccinated. And there are thousands across the state of New York that are believed to be deciding they don't want it. And so the governor decided she's going to call up the National Guard. Copper, play clip one.
And we'll be nation leading with our mandate, which strikes at midnight tonight, when everyone is expected in a hospital in the state of New York or a healthcare facility to have been vaccinated, I will be signing an executive order to give me the emergency powers necessary to address the shortages where they occur. That's going to allow me to deploy the National Guard, who are medically trained, deploy people who've been retired, who may have had a license lapse.
All right, stop there, Copper. So here's the bottom line. Did you hear that? She's nation-leading. She's nation-leading in the ability to fire people who have been doing a great job for over a year and a half in a pandemic working at a hospital. Nurses, doctors, food service, janitorial, whatever. And she's going to replace them with National Guard and others. When you call up a National Guardsman who's also a doctor or a nurse or a PA or a physical therapist, when you call them up, they are also typically doing that in their civilian world as well. And so now they have to leave healthcare in their communities to put on a uniform to go somewhere because the governor fired people. And literally, yeah, Copper points out, she said in the statement, she said she's granting herself emergency powers. Yes, I see. It's the emperor. She sends me a picture of the emperor from Star Wars. I love the Republic. Yes. But what she's literally doing here is she's the one creating the issue, and knowing full well that she is, she's willing to create more issues by using the military to backfill her decision-making, which is going to wind up stripping local communities of their doctors and nurses and other medical practitioners in order to go and cover down on her decision to fire people for not getting a shot, many of whom are working in the private sector, and I guarantee you there's going to be lawsuits filed. Folks, that's a classic example of a liberal governor using her military personnel to fill in the ranks that cover down on her mistakes. And it's wrong. The military should not be a tool for liberals. Well, folks, when we get back, your state legislature is down in Montgomery. Let's shift gears, shall we? Let's talk about the state legislature down there in Montgomery making decisions right now on your prison system, things that have to occur. And how about the way they're spending money? Do you like the fact that they're going to spend $1.2, $1.3 billion to build new prisons? We'll talk about that more when we get back. It's big doings. But I'll also tell you, right now, Democrats really don't want criminals locked up. They want policies and laws that will make it easier to not have to keep people in these new prisons. And we got some things coming out of D.C. even, trying to impede Alabama's ability to move forward on a new prison plan. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams here, hosting the biggest show on the afternoons across North Alabama, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right, we like to say, with an audience full of folks out there that identify as Right Side Ruffians. And I love it, man. What a great job. I've got the best job, I tell you what. And it's also an honor, by the way, to have this platform. To get a chance to get on here and talk to you, take your calls, get your feedback, but also be there to help provide you a voice. Because right now, I mean, too often it seems like in the world we're in, the conservatives are not given the true opportunity for a voice, and radio is one of those last opportunities. I mean, you can get taken down off your platform on something that's hosted by Google or Facebook or whatever else, or Twitter, but it's hard to defeat radio. Radio broadcasts far and wide. That's why in some nations we still have things like Radio Free America that's out there broadcasting into, you know, nations where you can't otherwise get the spoken word. And spoken word like this through radio is a great medium for joining together, you know, the thoughts, the ideas, the mindset, if you will, of conservatism. And you guys are a great audience. And that's the reason why the show is going so well. Copper, by the way, I checked a minute ago. Did I tell you where we are right now in downloads of the podcast?
Say that again? I missed that.
Did I tell you where we are
right now? Oh, yeah. No, let's see. Is it 4,600?
46? Copper, we've been past 46 for weeks.
Oh, no, I mean 56.
No, Copper. How about 6,700?
Oh, right, we're in the 6,000s now. Yeah. 66.
Work with me here. No, truthfully, I mean, that's the thing, folks. If you miss a segment of the show or you want to catch it again later or refer it to somebody, maybe, you know, Copper's Corner one Thursday or Right Side Way, my monologue any given day, or an interview I have with a guest, you can go to the website, rightsideradio.org, rightsideradio.org, and we've got them linked on there. If you're a podcaster, you'd like to drive in, you know, then just listen, you can download these segments of the show in 20-minute segments. We've had over 6,700 downloads since the show started. We're not even 3 months old yet.
Nice.
And I know, I'm saying. I'm pretty sure they're just, you know, it's God's favor, I guess, is what it really is. But I'm enjoying it. I don't know what a lot feels like, Copper, but that feels like a lot to me. So, yay. Yeah. I'm going to predict that we're going to be well over 7,000 by the end of the week. That's my prediction. So, yay. There it is. Thank you, audience. Hey, folks, listen, I'm going to switch gears on you. All right. Triple Dipper. Three stories you got to know. All right. I'm telling you, the first one we already covered pretty much as far as I can cover it in one day. The military is just a tool for liberals. The other one, though, I want to go into is the fact that too often Democrats, they really don't want criminals locked up. That's my next theme. So right now, Democrats don't want criminals locked up. Right now, down in Montgomery, starting yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock, your Alabama House and Senate members have gone into special session. Just a reminder for those who don't already know, special session means that basically the state House and Senate, they cannot convene on their own except for what's known as the regular session once a year. And the next regular session is scheduled for January of 2022. But sometimes things come up that they got to deal with. And the only way to come in and deal with it is for the governor to call them into a special session. Kind of weird when you think about it. I mean, it's supposed to be co-equal branches of government, but yet one has to wait on the other to call them in to do their work. That's kind of strange. But anyway, nonetheless, what it means is they are down there right now to do business on what's known as the call, which means the governor issued the call to special session for certain things. And in this case, it's to deal with Alabama's prison system and some potential prison reform issues or sentencing reform issues. And so what's happening right now is they've gone into session, and to rehash a little bit of yesterday's stuff, just to get you up to speed for those who weren't on the air with us yesterday, the prison system in Alabama is broken. All right, it's we haven't built any new prisons since the early '90s or mid '90s. I mean, that's a long time to go without new construction, and even then, it wasn't comprehensive construction. So what we're looking at right now is our facilities are in woeful condition. I've toured some. One of the ones they're planning on closing is St. Clair Correctional Facility. I toured that one, and it was awful. I mean, it was one of those things where I walk through thinking, you couldn't pay me to have a job as a guard here. It's the most unsafe place I've ever seen. It's you know, it, in some places there was warehousing 150 men in one room. You've got drains that don't drain well. You got locks that don't lock well. You got facilities that are crumbling. And that's just one prison. Well, we have quite a few like that. And yet we're also over capacity. We were, when I took office in 2010, we were at close to 180% capacity. That means we almost had twice as many people as we had bed space that was built for them. Well, we've reduced some of that. We're down to more like, last I think I heard, was more like 125 to 135% capacity. I have to check that. But nonetheless, there's been a plan in place for quite some time to build new prisons. It's been kicked down the road over and over and over again because no one wanted to be the legislature, apparently, who funded that type of construction. Well, we tried when I was down there. We tried to get something done. The Senate did pass it, but the House wouldn't take it up. Well, right now, they're finally coming together on a plan, it appears. Now, I will tell you, I'm not a fan of going straight to debt, government debt for essential services as the first option, all right? But when you see no other option, sometimes you have to consider it. Because you've got to get something done. We are in a lawsuit right now. The Department of Justice, along with some other usual actors, like the SPLC and ACLU and others, and the Equal Justice Initiative, they've sued the state of Alabama, saying that the failure to protect our inmates from violence, how about our guards too for that matter, and provide a safe environment was a constitutional violation. And we've had you know, fights in court about the provision of mental health concerns, about the ability to provide adequate resources for medical care, about other things that we need to do as a state, like providing an education and a job skills training for those in prison who qualify so that they can come out and have a skill that keeps them from going back to prison. Folks, this has got to happen. We're down to the point this has got to happen. Well, right now they're down there. They've got five bills on prison construction, prison funding, and sentencing reform. And the speaker believes it's going to pass, and I will tell you this. Just it came out on Twitter just a little while ago that while I was on the air, that literally I believe the bills, let me find that right here real quick. Yeah, they did get them out of committee. So the House General Fund Committee passed all three prison bills, clearing them for a vote on the House on Wednesday. So they're gonna vote on them in the House Wednesday and then send them up to the Senate. They're moving quickly because they already had most of the agreement in place. But there's other pieces of this, all right? So they're trying to finance this through a variety of means. They're trying to pay for it with some excess funds they have, which I'll be honest with you, being a conservative guy, a non-tax guy, a small government guy, I have a problem when you realize that government has excess funds. That means they taxed you too much. They had more than what they needed. Even though they've had the biggest budgets, they still came up with more than what they needed. And so bottom line is they're going to use about $143 million in excess funds. They're going to use $400 million from the federal government's COVID relief, and they're going to use a $785 million bond issue. We can talk about the finances all day. Most of my time today is not spent on the finances, but I do have some problems with some of the finances. But right now, the plan is what it is. And moving forward, that's what they're going to do. The interesting piece of this, though, is, you know, up there in D.C., you remember that guy during the Trump administration? House Judiciary Committee Chairman Representative Gerald Nadler. Remember him? The guy that kind of looks like a troll from, you know, the guy that runs the banks in the trolls in the Harry Potter movies or something like that. Anyway, Gerald Nadler. Gerald Nadler is up in D.C. He sent a letter to the Treasury Department asking them to stop Alabama from, in his opinion, misusing part of their COVID relief funds towards prison construction. Because he says, in his words, quote, directing funding meant to protect our citizens from a pandemic to fuel mass incarceration is in direct contravention of the intended purposes of the fund. I got news. No, it's not. The fund said if you can generate a response that says that you are using part of this for lost revenues, well, there were some lost revenues in terms of the way the prisons had to react to COVID, and they're going to be able to reapply this now to building new facilities. Oh, but Democrats, they don't want that. They want things that will, you know, make it easier on prisoners. We don't want to deal with mass incarceration. Well, what do you do with mass prisoners? You don't let them go. But if we keep on like this, the fact that we're being sued, well, a few years ago, California was sued the same way Alabama is, and the federal government mandated the release of prisoners because they didn't do anything about it. So Gerald Nadler, you can just go pound sand as far as I'm concerned. Because Alabama has to make its own decisions. And you have no right as a congressman from New York to step in and try to tell Alabama how to do its business. And if you shut this down, if you find a way to try and shut it down using the Biden administration's liberal Janet Yellen chair of Treasury, Secretary of the Treasury, then I got news. You are meddling in state affairs for no other purpose except to prove that Democrats don't like keeping people in prison. But it goes further. Part of what they're dealing with this week, and I guarantee you it was partly a bone that was being thrown to the Democrats. Now, I will say this, like, for instance, State House Minority Leader, Anthony Daniels from Huntsville, good guy, Democrat, but a good guy, I respect him. He thinks that this is a step in the right direction, but he did go on to say he hopes that they continue to commit to more on reform sides and focus on reform and rehabilitation. So what are the reform bills that are being considered? What are these things that State Senator Chris Elliott said he didn't believe this was necessary or appropriate for this special session? I believe that State Senator Larry Stutz, also from this listening area, a very conservative individual, said something similar. There's two bills right now. When we come back from this short break that we're about to take, I'm going to tell you, what are these, you know, social justice kind of make things better for the prisoners' bills that are also being considered at the same time they're considering building prisons? Are they weak? Are they namby-pamby? Or are they reasonable? And should they be done? I'm going to tell you what they are. There's two of them, and your legislature is considering them this week, and we'll see how that goes. Some Democrats in Montgomery are saying, don't send us a bill on prison construction until you send us those sentencing reform bills. We'll see how that plays out. All right, folks. News Talk, 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. You gotta know. The storylines today that I've followed so far have been the military is just a tool for liberals. And I'm in the second theme right now, if you will. Democrats don't want criminals locked up. I told you they're down in Montgomery right now in special session. It's on a topic that has been pushed down the road, kicked down the road like a can, if you will, for way, way, way too long. But it's got to be dealt with. Got to. If they don't deal with it now, we do run the risk. And I believe this with all my heart. We do run the risk of seeing the federal government mandate the release of prisoners into our streets that should be serving time. Now, that being said, our facilities are in woeful, woeful condition, and it's going to cost a lot of money. But I don't know how else you'd do it, because one of the essential services of government is a prison system. If you don't do that, then you have lawlessness and anarchy. If you don't have the incarceration capacity, then your court system is hampered in its ability to redirect those who have committed crimes into a place that will protect society from their further actions. I'm just saying, this has to happen. So if you're reading about it and going, well, I don't know why they're down there building prisoners. Just I don't care where they, just let them put a ball and chain on them and let them go out there and pick up trash on the side of the road. I don't care where they sleep at night. It's not that easy. You know, we have constitutional requirements. We have mandates. We also have, by the way, the fact that our security guards, our Department of Corrections guards, work in these facilities. And one of the things that really got me, that swayed me into the need to spend this money back when I was a state senator, even though we passed the bill and the House wouldn't take it up back then, one of the things that really got me was when we had guards killed in prison riots in Alabama. And I remember distinctly feeling like they're like our troops. It's like finding out your police department doesn't have what it needs to do its job on the street, or that your troops don't have what it needs in the war zone. And I distinctly remember being in Baghdad, driving around in a soft-sided Humvee while IEDs were going off. And I was so glad when they finally got me what I needed, which was an up-armored Humvee for my team. And my team finally had, you know, the protection it deserved. Well, our Department of Corrections facilities need to have our Department of Corrections personnel in a position to be able to do their jobs without fear for their lives at every single turn. But on top of that, I told you before the last break that the Democrats don't really care for prisons as much as they care for making it easier for prisoners to get out. Well, there's two sentencing reform bills that are a part of the package being considered this week, and you need to know what these are, all right? One of them doesn't bother me a whole lot. The other one I think I want to know some more about. But the first one would just simply say nonviolent offenders who were sentenced prior to 2013 and are still serving their time on certain crimes would be allowed to apply for appeal to the new laws that were passed in 2013 that would have perhaps given them a reduced sentence had they been in place at the time. Now, I was there. I remember the debate. I'll be honest with you. This is an unnecessary law because they were sentenced under the laws that existed at the time. Just because the laws softened later, not changed, we didn't decriminalize something. We didn't suddenly say your nonviolent offense is no longer a crime. What we said was the sentencing guidelines allowed more flexibility to the courts. That does not mean they should now be given a softer sentence, because when they committed the crime, the law was what it was, and they committed the crime knowing what the law was. They took the risk, and they're paying the penalties. So if this passes, you know, I get it, but I don't see it as being necessary. But the second one I'm a little more concerned about. The second sentencing reform bill in the governor's call expands on a law, keep in mind what I just said, expands on a law that allows inmates to complete their sentences on a period of supervised release rather than staying in prison. You know what that is? That's called we have overcrowding and we're just trying to get some people out of these beds and out of the house so that we can have less to have to guard during the day. They say the idea is that inmates who receive supervision have a better chance to successfully adjust to life outside prison. I got news. They get out when they get out. They don't need a phase in. All right? And so I disagree with this. I think this is a gimme. I think this is a Democrat-enhanced opportunity to just literally say, let's just, if we let them out a little early, they can transition back into life. They don't have to have a transition back into life. Their expectancy is to get out when they get out, and they know it, and they're looking forward to the day. The idea that we have to phase them in my opinion, is just going soft on people who should be serving their time. So I do not see that second one as being something that is necessary, nor do I see it as being reasonable for a special session. So, folks, that's classic examples of Democrats being softer. Now, Republicans are out there fighting for some of these bills, too. I'll be honest. But I think you're going to find that the resistance to those two sentencing reform bills is going to come from the conservative wing of our Republicans in Montgomery. And I encourage them to go ahead and make themselves known on that issue, on those issues. Sentencing reforms in a special session is not proper. And I guarantee you they were thrown in there to try and win some votes from the Democrat side on the prison construction bills so they could say it's bipartisan. Well, we have a supermajority of Republicans in both the House and the Senate. Just pass the freaking construction bills and go to the House. That's what I say. Just take it on back home. We don't have to worry about sentencing reform in a special session. All right, folks, there's more stuff coming on this. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, just plain right. I'll be unpacking it more for you when we get back from this break. We'll be right back.